I say, come back, baby, come back. Click clack, click clack. There's my baby waving her handkerchief down.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, tensions rise on Geonosis as our heroes meet Click Clack, the last Geonosian. With the future of his species on the line, the Ghost crew must face off against Saul Guerrera. No one has a concept of what a Death Star is, so they all fail at Geonosian Jeopardy. We're talking Ghost of Geonosis Part 2 this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good. It's more like Geonosian charades, but or not even charades. What is the one where you have to draw?
Pictionary.
It's more like, yeah, Geonosian Pictionary that they fail.
You're absolutely okay.
Right. I was trying to write something like that in my notes, and I didn't articulate it better. So you sort of bridged the gap there.
So they all fail Geonosian Pictionary. There we go. How you doing, Chris? You having a good week?
I am so far.
That's cool. Did you do anything fun?
No, not. I mean, life in general is always fun when you're Chris Honeywell, but nothing out of the ordinary fun. Except I've just been bathing in the media that I love, i.e. Star Trek and Star Wars. I was just before the show, I was just saying that yesterday I had to choose what do I watch right now, the brand spanking new season 7 Clone Wars or the brand spanking new episode of Picard that everybody's freaking out over because something happens in it.
Yeah.
What do I watch? It's the most awesome dilemma ever.
So to totally date this episode, the first episode of Clone Wars came out yesterday.
Yeah, we're pretty excited around here, but there's not much we're going to tell. We purposely were like, let's talk about this in depth before we start the show so that we don't spoil anybody, because it's very risky. All I'm going to say is I'm very, 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 it's everything I could have wished it to be. And I almost didn't even make it into the episode because, like, when the opening theme starts, like, ah, that's nice. And then the platitude came up and I went, yes, because I know, like, Yoda's gets to go back into form. And then it goes into the narrator. And what I love about it is it just picks up where it left off. The narrator's just like, blah, 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 Spider-Man, blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, on this planet, blah, blah, blah. And then you're just into us. It was just like, yes, I'm back.
Yeah, I actually posted the what you sent me, because on both in the Two True Freaks Cantina and on our Twitter page. And Chris just like sent me like in big letters, platitudes!
Yeah.
I posted it on our Twitter. Yeah, so me and Chris decided, like, we're going to, because we weren't as good with this when Rebels was running, but we started getting better at it when Resistance was running. If we talk Clone Wars, we're going to talk no spoiler Clone Wars, because we are going to eventually cover Season 7 on the show. Like, we're going to cover it, but we don't want anybody to
It's going to be fun, too.
Yeah, so I loved it, too. I wrote that it felt like coming home. Because Clone Wars is the reason I became a Star Wars fan in the first place. And it's my bread and butter of Star Wars. It's my first love of Star Wars, and I adore it. So like, it felt like I was coming home.
Yeah, it was a comfy shoe, that's for sure.
The only thing, I was telling Chris beforehand, that I wish is that we actually covered the Bad Batch arc in our pre-Rebels episode, our post-Clone Wars pre-Rebels episodes. And we covered the Bad Batch arc, and so, like, I know the basic plot of the Bad Batch. And, like, I kind of wish I hadn't done that, because, like, there were certain things in the new episode I'm like, oh, I'm spoiled on this now. And Chris is blissfully unaware of it. So that's the only thing about for me is that I wish I hadn't known, but it's just a blast. I'm so happy to be back, and I'm just jonesing to get to those Ahsoka episodes. I'm just jonesing to get to them so bad.
Yeehaw,
I know Siege of Mandalore is coming, and I can't wait to see it. I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's looking good.
So part of my last week, I got to watch a Star Trek, Chris.
I see that now. I'm very, very, very curious as to what Star Trek that you saw was, because depending on what Star Trek it was you saw, you're like what was going on could be completely, you know, it could be completely like, oh, self-contained little Star Trek, or it could be like...
No, it was the first episode of a series.
Did you watch the first episode of Picard?
No.
Because, okay.
So what it was, and I have now discovered, because I told this to Billy, because Billy's my Star Trek friend.
This could be good or bad.
Well, the thing is, for me, it was great, because I have no concept of the rest of Star Trek, right? But I found out that it was a controversial thing.
So was it like Deep Space Nine or something?
Wait. So like this is one of my mom's favorites. And it was the first episode of Enterprise.
Oh, I've seen the first. I haven't seen Enterprise as a whole, but I've seen an arc with the Mirror Universe in it, and I've seen the first the pilot episode of it with the Klingon, right? Is it a Klingon?
They have to save a Klingon, and it's like the first time that humans are going out into space.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because again, I have very little concept of the rest of Star Trek because I've seen so little of it. So it actually reminded me a lot of Doctor Who. And you know, like whenever the Doctor gets a new companion, there's always that first episode where he takes the companion to space and the companion's just experiencing space for the first time. And that's what it very much reminded me of, because it's these humans experiencing other species in space for the first time. So it very much reminded me of an episode of Doctor Who, which I really, really enjoyed. And it's one of the earliest parts of the canon, right? Like, it's like...
No, you start chronologically, in the timeline, you started I think that's probably the early, unless there's like flashbacks in Enterprise.
There's the movie that comes before it, because they had the character from the movie in the episode. The guy who actually invented like the hyperspace travel or whatever it's called, the warp drive.
Well, yes, there was a movie contact, where they time traveled back before. Like if you wanted to use that as a measure of like they've been to that time before, there are episodes of the original Star Trek where they went back to the, you know, to the 60s. So you would have to go back to, you know, the Star Trek where they went through the time warp and ended up in the 60s and accidentally beamed, you know, and were spotted as a UFO. But like in the just general, like, Enterprise is the series that takes place earliest in the Star Trek timeline.
And I have seen First Contact. Like, I remember watching it when I was a kid with my mom, because that's my mom's favorite movie of all the Star Trek movies. And so I have seen First Contact. It's just been, you know, like 20 years since I've seen it, but I remember watching it. So, like, I really enjoyed it. It reminded me so much of Doctor Who. It really did. And, like, I'm interested. I'm interested to continue. And I'm thinking, because I was talking to Billy, and Billy was saying how much, like, Enterprise was such a controversial series because it's so vastly different from everything else. So I might actually go ahead and knock Enterprise out first, just because I have no concept of whether or not it's good or bad. So it's standing on its own for me. And
I'll start watching Enterprise too, and we'll end up doing an Enterprise show down the line.
Yeah, like an Enterprise recap.
Adding extra hours to the day and everything. It'll be great.
But
I've heard the general thing that I've heard from my Star Trek fan friends and people who've watched Enterprise is it's a rough go at first. Like, it takes like 3 seasons, but something happens. I think there was a writer's strike in there somewhere in the middle of it or something, but there was some point where it came back for like the 3rd season and it started really like hitting the ground running and had and then people were really into it. Then it got canceled and they had to finish off what they had started really quickly. And it sort of like had an abbreviated ending. But I guess the ending of Enterprise is quite strong anyway. So I guess it like it's rocky throughout. But then again, with the people who are describing it are people who've probably seen every movie and every show up until then. And Enterprise was the last Star Trek show before Discovery, you know, for 10 years or longer, or however long it was, 16 years or something like that between Star Trek shows. So when it went out, it was like after Deep Space Nine and Voyager, and people were a little burned out, I think, on Star Trek because there was so much Star Trek running on TV at that time. You could come home from work and be seeing an episode in TNG or Voyager, Deep Space. It was just like, okay, you had to watch for a couple minutes to figure out which Star Trek you were watching a rerun of. But I'm excited. I'm excited. So if you want to go, in timeline after that, you got to watch the original series.
I was thinking about looking up like a chronological order of Star Trek to watch. I think that'd be kind of fun to do, actually. Instead of doing air date, kind of do it in chronological order. I think that'd be fun.
Sure. Well, they were mostly like Enterprise is the only one that sort of in the way they released it wasn't in chronological order. So yeah, you would have to do Enterprise and the original Star Trek, which would be jarring. Because it would be, you know, but because you'd be going back to the 60s, but then Next Generation and then Deep Space Nine and.
So prime timeline, Enterprise, Discovery, original Star Trek Animated, original Star Trek movies, Star Trek The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine and Voyager.
Yep. I wasn't even counting the movies, but the movies are easy to knock out.
And I've seen a couple of them here and there, so. But, yep, Hope has watched a Star Trek. Yay!
See,
A whole Star Trek.
I'll be really excited when you get into Next Generation, because I think that's the one that would vibe with you the most, would have the most. But then again, I don't know about Deep Space Nine and stuff like that. But like TNG has sort of a group of characters that I think you would have fun analyzing and reacting to. Anyway.
Hey, now to talk about a Star Wars.
Yeah, let's get to the Star Wars.
So what do you think of Ghost of Geonosis Part 2?
I liked it better than Ghost of Geonosis Part 1, to be honest. Week I was sort of like, maybe we should have done these two together, but... like watching them separate, they had a kind of separate, different feel to them. Watching them separate, like, and I don't know if that was just the way the story developed them between the two, or if there was a different. I didn't go back and check to see, you know, if there were two different directors on.
No, on it was all the same.
It was all the same director.
Yeah.
I thought this episode was superior in a few ways.
It's sort of like the early season 2 episode where we first meet Rex, Wolf, and Gregor. Because it was a two-parter as well, but the two episodes were very different.
Right.
And I kind of have the same way. So, like, listeners, we decided this week we're going to score this episode on its own and score the two parts together. Because when you, together, to me, they help each other vastly because it's supposed to be a two-parter, but they do, separately, they each have stuff that they bring to the table. And I like this episode a lot better, too. So much of last week was mostly just setup. And so this was, like, we're all, like, the drama and the action.
Everything starts rolling in this one, yeah.
Yeah, and also fucking Sabine with a jetpack. Well, you ready to get into this?
I am.
All right. Ghost of Geonosis Part 2 is the 50th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on January 7, 2017 as a two-parter, and both episodes aired that night together. It was, again, written by Dave Filoni, Matt Minchinowitz, and Stephen Melching, and directed by Mel Zweier, same as last week. Some extra information for you. Captain Brunson is voiced by Leslie S. Miller. Her other works include Key and Peele, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and Kingdom Hearts 3. Captain Brunson is named after Look Development Producer Coordinator Jessica Brunson. Click Clack proved an opportunity to do something that has never been attempted in Star Wars, make a sympathetic Geonosian. The production team looked at similar other medias, like the movie District 9, for inspiration. The jetpack-wearing jump troopers are based on flying stormtroopers for Star Tours. Oh, I forgot to do Rebels Recon this week. Aw. Well, you know who else likes to recon their Rebels?
Oh, yes.
I forgot to do Rebels Recon.
Reconning all the time.
If you guys want to, like, figure out go see the Rebels Recon for this episode, go to YouTube, type in Rebels Recon Ghost of Geonosis, and you'll see it there. So, oh, I forgot to do it this week. Oh. Hi, Yoda! How? Yoda! It's your big week, because Clone Wars is back.
Yes! Yoda's excited to see Clone Wars. Yeah, a little afraid, but excited.
That's actually my question for you. In big letters, I wrote, are you excited for the Clone Wars?
Yoda, that time period. Yoda, drinky, does not remember a lot. 1 minute, Yoda's at the bar. Drinky. Next minute, throwing things at Palpatine, he is.
And somewhere in between that, at some point, you rode a battle llama into battle and Coruscant.
Battle llamas and who knows, Baby Yoda? I don't know.
Is that where Baby Yoda came from?
Yoda does not know. Lots of dark periods. One could say blackout periods.
Oh my god, we now know Baby Yoda's origin story.
No. No.
How do you know? You said you had blackout periods.
No.
You had blackout periods.
No. Call Maury Povich. You should. Then we see.
Yoda, you're gonna have platitudes soon.
DNA says Baby Yoda's not Yoda's child. Yay!
You are.
Yay! In your face, Yaddle! Yay! Woo! Cheer!
You are not the
father! You are not the father! Well, there he goes.
I would not want to see a drunk Yoda. Maybe on video, not in person.
Oh, God.
Drunk with the Force is allowed anywhere near.
Oh, God. When Yoda was talking, I thought about something Clone Wars that I wanted to say in the middle of that. I forgot. Maybe it'll come to me. So, well, you ready to get into this? Act 1?
I'm ready.
Act 1. Last week, Bail Organa called up the Ghost Crew and Grunkle Rex, and he was like, hey, it's me, your boy, Bail Organa, and I need you to bail someone out of a jam for me. And no one laughed at his dad joke. Anyway, Saw Gerrera from the Clone Wars, but pre-Rogue One, has gone missing on Geonosis. Bail wants him to find him and whatever his team was looking for. So our heroes go to Geonosis, which is pretty much still a dead planet. They split up. Hera, Sabine, and Zeb find a shield generator for their base, that their base desperately needs. Ezra, Kanan, and Rex go down into the Geonosis catacombs and find battle droids. But the droids are taken care of by Saul, who is still alive and still very crazy. But he's not, like, Rogue One crazy yet, so he's still able to manipulate a lot of the episode. And they warn Hera about the droids, but it's too late when Zeb and Sabine are surrounded. Team Underground have to find the last Geonosian to save their friends. They track down a bug named Click Clack and take his droid controller away to save their friends. And the episode ends when Saul throws the Geonosian against the wall and Ezra looks like he didn't sign up for any of this. On to this week, where we pick up with Saul cramming his arm into Click Clack's neck, going, "What are the Empire's secrets? Why did you kill my friends?" And everyone else is like, "Dude, chill, he's unarmed." Since Ezra has a knack for connecting with... He has a knack for Click Clack! I don't know, it made me laugh. Made me laugh, I'm sorry. Since Ezra has a knack for connecting with people, Kanan offers up that his son should talk to the Geonosians. And Ezra goes, "Click Clack, we won't hurt you." And Click Clack is like, "This asshole just crushed my windpipe. I don't believe you."
And yeah, there's a when you can finally get to Star Trek, the original series, there's a great scene where Captain Kirk punches somebody in the face to calm him down and goes, "We won't hurt you." 1 second afterwards. That's what that reminded me of.
Ezra senses that Click Clack is afraid, because look at Saul, what Saul just did to him. Also, humans killed off all of his people, so Click Clack has reasons to be scared. But Ezra is gentle and asks what the Empire was doing on the planet. Click Clack draws a circle inside of a circle. As the audience, we know it's the Death Star, but our heroes have no concept of a Death Star, so they guess all the wrong answers. And none of this is good enough for Saul, who is still demanding answers. When Chopper picks up an energy signal, Saul handcuffs Click Clack so the bug can't run away. And Saul drops a metal disc on the ground, and Ezra picks it up. Turning it on, it's a picture of Steela! Steela, I love you! I miss you all the time, Steela! I love you so much, Steela! And they head off to find the energy reading. But Ezra catches up, letting Saul know that he dropped his disc. And Saul almost throws hands on this child, because he's like, "Where did you get this?" But Rex, my sweet Grunkle Rex, when he sees Steela's picture, someone who he helped train and admired, my sweet Rex just looks so crushed for a second, and someone needs to give Rex a blanket and some hot chocolate. Saul snatches up the picture back. Rex takes Ezra to the side and goes, "That's Steela. She was really awesome, and everyone loved her. But she was killed by a separatist gunship, and the Geonosians made the gunship. So it's a touchy-feely subject for all of us." Up in space, the Empire arrives with the gorgeous Captain Brunson leading the charge. She can step on me. Let's add her to my mommy list. And she's not happy to be there and thinks that it's just meteors that triggered all their alarms. But they pick up life on the surface because Hera and the other kids are up on the surface. And Brunson sends out some ships to check it out. And Space Mom picks up the ships. But because the others are underground, she can't call to warn Space Dad. So Zeb takes a transmitter and runs out into the caves. They reach Click Clack's home, where he's been repairing droids. And this pisses Saul off, since the droids attacked and killed his men. But Ezra and Rex reason that he was protecting himself, you know, because all of his people were killed. And Saul rampages through Click Clack's home, knowing that the bug is hiding something. And Click Clack takes out an egg, but not just any egg. It's a queen egg, which is the future of his species. And the heroes also think that that's what Click Clack has been drawing. Suddenly, Zeb calls in, and Hera warns them that the Empire is coming. But the entrance they came in through collapsed. Rex mentioned that there's a big chasm they jumped over last episode that went all the way up to the surface so they can get out that way. But Saul wants to bring Click Clack along for interrogation. Ezra argues that it could put the egg in danger. But Saul sees that his mission is much more important than the future of an entire species. So Kanan comes up with a compromise. They will take Click Clack and the egg to their base to protect the egg, and then they must bring him back home. And Saul agrees to this. They head out just as Hera is calling in, going, "Get your asses up here now!" Just as the Imperial scouts are coming in. What'd you think of Act 1?
That was pretty good. Yeah, I actually got some new notes after your introduction to it, but I was noting last time, like, wow, Saw gets really beat up in the next few years, but like his brain is well on the way to degrading. And people bitch about C-3PO. He's annoying and stuff, but if they had C-3PO or some translator droid with them in this episode, boy, that would have changed the whole outcome of everything.
God, I didn't even think about that.
C-3PO was there, he would have gotten to save the universe like R2. He could have put it right in R2's face.
Yeah.
And I like how they, because I was like, okay, that's a Death Star reference, but then they're like, oh, okay. And obviously they're not going to get it just from that little communication. But then I noticed they gave it two cover stories for it, not just one. There was there's another thing that could have been the circle in the circle that comes up in part three. And then there's the egg. They were like, oh, it's the egg, you know, but that doesn't, the egg. Well, maybe I guess the egg was why the Empire was there or whatever. But like they cover their asses really good. So at the end of this episode, people aren't going like, huh, I wonder what that circle in the circle meant. You know, they give it enough ample opportunity so everybody can just forget about the circle in the circle, which is story wise a good idea.
Yeah, I have a very similar note to that, so I'm going to just go ahead and say it. I love seeing these characters because they really have no concept of a Death Star.
Yeah, why would they?
I know, and I just find that so fascinating because, like, the Death Star is such, like, an important part of Star Wars history. Like, everybody knows what a Death Star is. Even if you haven't even seen Star Wars, you know what a Death Star is. So I find it really interesting watching a story where they have absolutely no concept of this. And it reminds me of, like, I thought of a bunch of, like, negative, like, real-world examples. But like, we always have that in our real world, too. Like, we can't imagine these, like, terrible, horrible things until they actually happen because we have no concept of it.
And it also reminded me of,
like, you know, it also reminded me of, like, if you, like, took a cell phone back in time to the 1700s, they have, like, no concept of, like, of this kind of, like, communication. So it's very interesting to me just to watch this story unfold because, like, we as the audience, of course, know it's the Death Star. But it's interesting, like, watching them, and they do a very good job of covering their asses, just like you said. Like, but I just find that so interesting watching this story because these people, like, they don't know what a Death Star is. They have no idea. They have no concept.
And Click Clack might not even know what it is. He might have just saw, like, that a picture of it, because he could have, like, if he wanted to really get smart with, like, describe it, he could have drawn a picture of the Death Star, then drawn a picture of a planet, and then drawn lines going from the Death Star, to be like, this is a weapon that shoots planets. But instead, he might have just seen somebody looking at a readout. You know, he might have seen his dad working on the project, and just seen a big round, you know, a picture of the Death Star, and that's what he's like. Well, that's what they were working on, but he might not even know what the concept of the Death Star is.
It's not even like Saul gave him a chance to explain. Like, he drew it, and Saul was like, that's not good enough! Even if he had, like, more time to, like, really draw it out and explain it, like, Saul never gave him the opportunity because just Saul's just so uppity and stuff. I actually didn't put, like, really many Saul notes because most of the Saul notes were just repeats from last week. Because Saul's pretty much the same thing as he was last week.
Yeah, he's almost like a clockwork, you know, like, the good thing is, you got Forrest Whitaker doing his voice, and so that adds a lot of shading to it. Otherwise, Saw could have come off as just being one single note this whole thing, you know?
Yeah, so if you want to know what I thought about Saw, just listen to last week's episode. But, because it's pretty much the same this one. I do like the kind of, like, jump that he got a little bit more extreme in this one to, like, really show he's off the deep end. But that's really the only difference, so.
Yeah. And I think Ezra's kind of trolling. If he's not trolling Saw, he's kind of tone deaf, because like he pops it up and it's got the picture of Steela on it, and he just comes walking in with like, hey, look at this personal thing I found of yours with the personal, you know. It's like if you found, it's the equivalent of like a locket with somebody's picture in it. You know, you don't
but
hold.
I also think a normal person would be like, oh, that's mine. Thank you for picking that up. I'm so glad I didn't lose it. And Saw just.
Yeah, but it's Saw was quote unquote triggered. You know,
this is also Ezra, who has given Hondo like 12 opportunities and has gotten burned every single time and has given like opportunities to Maul. So, I mean, this is Ezra we're talking about.
I'm just saying, yeah, I'm saying it's a personal thing. So like if you found somebody's diary, and even if you read it, you wouldn't walk up to them and be like, hey, you dropped your diary with it like open to page 15 while you're like looking down at it. You would hand it to them like closed. And but I understand why they did it for story wise. But I was thinking, there's almost an element of Ezra's just like, yeah, fuck this guy. Hey, look what I found. But what they said about using have you ever seen District 9?
No, it's always been on my list to see, though.
I found it funny that they mentioned District 9 for making alien bug-like creatures to be sympathetic, because District 9, like, goes out of its way to make the bugs in there non-sympathetic, or just, like, so alien in a repulsive way. And they also sort of combine like the caricatures of what people view like refugees as. And they make it so like upon all, you know, visual external measurements of the bugs that they're like, you know, they like puke up stuff and they're kind of wincy and stuff. And so it takes the whole, like, they have to take the main character in that movie and put him literally in the same situation as the bugs. And you go through the movie to build the sympathy for those bugs. Whereas this is 24 minutes of click clack. And if you're using the District 9, it's almost going in the opposite direction.
Well, I partially disagree with that, because if people like us, like we have seen the Clone Wars and we've seen the prequel trilogies, so we've already seen the Geonosians be like repulsive. We've seen them be the enemies. We've seen them murder clones and almost murder like Ahsoka and Barriss, and see them like work with the bad guys to make the Death Star. So this would be like the end of the movie, where we've already had everything that came before it.
But in District 9, the change was it, like, there wasn't, like Click Clack is, they didn't do, they mentioned District 9, but they didn't do a District 9 on him. They make him, like, a little bit anthropomorphic, but the way they do it is, and it's not unrealistic, is he's, you know, he's scared shitless, and he's desperate with his egg. So he comes, and he's a little kid, so he comes off as very cringy and you know, and scared and stuff, because Saw is constantly throwing him around and stuff like that. So it's not that it's hard to make him sympathetic, but it doesn't give him much of a chance to be like humanized, but he's a bug. But like, you know, it's almost as if they use more Ezra and Ezra's reaction to Saw and our visceral, like just seeing Click Clack like cowering and stuff isn't really sympathetic, but when you see Saw like grab him, it's just like, hey. And then they'll cut to a shot of Ezra having the same sort of reaction, and it's very, very effective in making you it doesn't just make you sympathetic for Click Clack, it makes you want to, like, you know, whack Saul Guerrero right in the face with a metal pole, you know.
I always,
you know, even tactically, if you were even a cold, hard tactician, Saul Guerrero is going the wrong way about getting information out of a kid, you know.
Yeah, I asked this as someone who hasn't seen District 9. I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. You said that part of the plot is them putting somebody in the bug's position to make the bug sympathetic because we see a human in their position.
He starts turning into a bug. He gets an injection and start like they do it. They don't just do it. He's not just like he is friends with the bug and has to like, you know, the spoiler for the movie. They're basically like refugees that have like found their way to Earth and are in a little segmented district and they're living in like total squalor. And yeah, at some point in the storyline, this guy starts turning into one of them. And so like, not only has to sympathize with their plight, but with their whole thing, you know, so their whole existence. So it's, and they never make the bugs like more human. They make the human more bug in that movie. So it's a very interesting and a little more complex take. Usually movies will anthropomorphize the aliens or bring you into a place where you start anthropomorphizing them. And this movie works in the opposite direction. So it was, but they're very similar to the Geonosians and just general like, or like the movie The Fly or something like that. They got saliva dripping off them at all time when they eat. It's just like, and they like rats and, you know, stuff like that,
the,
you know.
The reason why I ask is because they do kind of do something sort of similar in the episode, because Ezra is the one that Ezra has lost his family.
Right.
And so his click-clack, and Ezra is the one that tries to put Saul in that position of like, well, you've lost your family and so has click-clack, so why don't you put yourself in his shoes? And so they do kind of do that. I'd be interested to know, because they said District 9 and other media, so I'd be interested to know like what other media influenced this episode as well.
I mean, right, first thing that spring to my head is like E.T., because E.T. was kind of ugly and instantly lovable by everybody, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah. Click-Clack isn't really portrayed like E.T. No, I think they did a good job with Click-Clack. It's a little frustrating because it's kind of drawn in broad strokes, but that's sort of what you got to do in this. But it works. And it works in the story here, and it works in the larger Saw Gerrera arc too. So
yeah. Did you have any more notes?
Nope, that's all I got.
I have a little note, a big note. My little note is in big letters, Stila! And then Rex's face when he sees Stila!
Yeah.
Oh, I love that moment because, like, I actually had forgotten for half a second that, yeah, Rex knew Stila and he helped train her. I actually forgot about that. So, like, when I saw his face, I was just like, oh yeah, he knows Stila. I forgot about that.
And Rex had been given Saw the hairy eyeball this whole time, just like, yeah, I know and respect this guy and I like him, but I don't, you know, I know he's a little bit on the extreme. And then when he sees Stila, it all like it reminds him of why it makes more sense, you know, why Saw is like that. So it's a nice little scene done visually.
Yeah. My only other note, and it's kind of a two-part note, so I'll do the first part first. I like how every person addresses click-clack. Rex, like, I used Rex and Saw as the biggest examples. Rex has every reason in the world to not like Geonosians. He fought on Geonosis. These guys have tried to kill him multiple times. Like, he has every reason in the world not to like Geonosians. But Rex, along with Kanan and Ezra, calls click-clack by he. When they refer to click-clack, they're like, oh, he is doing this, he is doing that. But when Saul talks about click-clack, he calls click-clack an it. And he calls him a thing. And which is, of course, like, you know, click-clack's clearly sentient, and he's clearly very smart because he's been repairing battle droids and stuff. So I like how they showed the story of it's a good way to set up the story, because eventually we're going to get to the Ghost Crew versus Saul, and it's a good way to kind of start showing that divide of like, they're seeing click-clack as a person and he's seeing click-clack as a monster,
right? Which has also been traditionally in Star Wars, the job of the Imperials, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, right from Star Wars, the first one like that, like overt scene like that is where, you know, they show up with Chewbacca as their fake prisoner. And he's like, where did you get that thing? You know? And that's when they choose that opportunity to croak everybody in the room. So,
yeah,
it's a strong Star Wars tradition. But I like, and we're operating in that time period of Star Wars where there's a little more gray area. So it's good to see a character like Saw, you know?
Yeah. And then the other note I had about Rex is, to me, it shows how important that episode, The Last Battle, was. Because The Last Battle was the episode where he got to face off against the Separatist droids to have, like, one last battle of the Clone Wars. And it ended with him and the Separatists working together to save their lives and stuff. And, I, to me, this shows how important that episode was, because I don't know if Rex would be as sympathetic to Click Clack if he hadn't had gone through that first.
Yeah, well, Rex has had a lot more opportunities to see people, like, go from one side to another, or be an exception to a rule or stuff, and just even just within the clones to and he's, you know, he's been around a group of people who are more like that, and it's rubbed off on him to where he also knows the Geonosians aren't its, they're not just bugs, you know. I mean, it's more Jedi to think of something that would just be sort of like a bug as a living being too. As more sentient, but you know, Rex knows that, like, if they were just dumb bugs, you know, how are they designing Death Stars? You know, they're obviously, you know, sentient and have a tech society and technology and everything like that. So
yeah, they were one of the main droid builders during the Clone Wars.
Yeah, and I mean, Rex is a prime example of somebody who was, like, you know, made for a purpose that was, you know, and tossed about in the tides of fate, and may have been working for a bad cause here and there, or doing something that ended up being destructive when he thought he was doing something good. So, you know, he can definitely, you know, humanize someone and not put them into a category.
I mean, if we want to get really technical, Rex technically worked for the people who created the Empire.
Right. And I mean, when Rex was doing all the stuff that was good, when he was fighting with the Jedi, it was all the machinations of Palpatine. And then, you know, a lot of the clones ended up working for the Empire too, and doing stuff too. So, you know, the Geonosians are just another group of sentient beings that got caught up in the fates, and some of them were probably evil, just like anything else, you know.
Yeah, it was also very much extra in my Rex feels, because I just watched Clone Wars before I did the outline for this.
Yeah, that sort of thing, that it's kind of like a humanism that's expressed in Star Wars. It's a little more expressed now that they have in the TV shows, because you sort of have to, if you're going to do long form stories without them being like almost like psychopathic, you know. You have to have like some sort of like moral core to the good guys in it, you know, that goes deeper if you're going to be doing longer, more detailed stories. It's a very, yeah, Star Trek-y thing, you know, the way that like they deal with Click Clack. Not Saw, though.
No. So that's all I had for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready for Act 2.
All right.
Act 2 might be my favorite act. Just,
yeah. Act 2 was weirdly short. Like, the thing is, like, I didn't write
much.
It was
short, wasn't it?
Well, I didn't write much, but it was 7 minutes like the rest of the other two acts, like, because actually Act 3 was, I think, like 9 minutes. So
yeah, I was gonna say Act 3 was like the long act, but Yeah. At least it was easy to distinguish. They gave us nice, like, commercial breaks to
yeah,
on them. It was very, very easy to see.
Very clear screen wipes.
Yes, yes.
I'm not
You don't often do that.
Yeah, it's not me going like, is this still Act 2? So, Act 2! Imperial scouts are flying in fast, and Zeb is sprinting to get back to the ghost. Up in space, Captain Brunson sees that it's the ghost, and like any good Imperial, if they destroy the ghost, it's a big old shiny promotion for all of them! And evil stars in her eyes, they go in after the ghost. And Zeb is still sprinting at the ship, but luckily he makes it back in time. Hera takes off as Sabine and Zeb get on the guns, but because of the sandstorm last episode, their guns are barely working. And Sabine channels her inner Anakin Skywalker and says, "Stupid sand, it gets everywhere," which made me laugh. They take out the bombers, but the Empire will send more. Kanan tells Hera to come get them. It'll be a tight fit in the ghost, but Hera flies off to pick them up, or tries to, and she slowly starts lowering the ghost down into the shaft. And with our other team, Click Clack tries to take Ezra a different way from where Chopper is leading them, but he's overruled by Saw, and they keep on going. And meanwhile, the Imperials are like, "Let's go down to the surface and get some rebels, hooray!" And they arrive. Kanan's team makes it to the shaft just as Hera is arriving. They all jump on the ghost, where Kanan introduces Saw to the rest of the group. And Saw says that it's an honor to meet Space Mom, because she's the best. And Hera, freaking sassy Mom Syndulla, gives him the biggest stink eye and says that she's heard all about him. And the team are split over Click Clack, who wants to stay on his planet. But Saw wants to take the bug with them, and Kanan reminds him of their previous deal. And Space Mom goes, "Husband, I'm gonna need to talk to you alone for a minute." And Space Wife takes him off to the side. And Hera questions Kanan how much he knows about Saw. When Kanan admits not much, Hera says, "Well, he's a borderline terrorist. We gotta be careful." And then they hear Ezra yelling, and they run back in to find Saw is shocking the shit out of Click Clack.
And Saw shocked shit down by the seashore.
Oh, God, it's hard to say. And everyone else is like, "The fuck are you doing?" And Saw says that he's gonna take their ship and Click Clack. And he blames Kanan as a Jedi as the reason they lost the Clone Wars. After they scuffle around for a bit, Click Clack drops the Queen Egg. Saw picks it up and holds the egg at blaster point, which is probably one of the weirdest things I have ever written on Jagas and Jedi. What'd you think of Act 2? It's like funny, this is the shortest act, but it's the one that has, like, I think, like, almost all of my notes.
The most stuff in it, yeah. I got a good amount of notes for 3, but I got about the same amount for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, this scene is, or this act is just, it's firing on all cylinders. I forgot that, like, I remember Saw being a prick, but man, he's just, like, over the, like, ridiculous in this. But, like, he's insane, so he's doing things that are irrational and I mean, it's irrational for him to be treating Click Clack like that when everybody there probably wants to, you know, kill him. He's not, you know, he's not working well with his allies. Not working well in the situation. He's letting him his craziness.
And I didn't write it down, but I love like when Zeb is just like growling and like Rex is holding Zeb back. Like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. But man, that like the editing in the like the editing, the camera work, I mean, it's all CGI, but the way that this whole segment is put together is just very visually Star Wars. The battle with the bombers, the TIE bombers, is gorgeous, and the way that the camera tracks it and the it has that Star Wars thing where you feel the physical heft of the ships. And like it's a whole melding of all the elements of the sound of where you see a ship doing a maneuver, but you can hear the engines working harder for certain things, and
yeah,
you get a whole
you can tell that they went through a sandstorm last week.
Yeah,
like
it's,
it feels like the ghost is moving slower than normal.
And yeah, it's all just very visually laid out in a very in a coherent way where you follow it, you get the sense of the movement. When they cut to someone in the cockpit, there's movement. The way the movement is in the background and the way it leads into the next cut are very visually like George Lucas Star Wars, and it just drives the whole thing forward. Even though like basically the whole outside of the planet is everything is bathed in yellow light, so everything's like this literally piss yellow and orange color, and it just looks gorgeous. It looks wonderful. I was just enjoying the hell out of it. And as far as mood light, my only other note is, as far as mood lighting go, that the lighting inside the light cruiser cockpit and the command center, that's the moodiest mood lighting I've ever seen in any Imperial ship. I think she likes to, she's like the gothest commander ever.
And
she whacks her guys in the back of the head and stuff. She's
I love that note.
She's just like, when she comes in for her shift, she goes over and turns the light down like three notches. Says, all right, now we're working. But that was the darkest cockpit I've seen in a like that hasn't been like a, you know, pirate cruiser or something. She's really working the mood and with her people. But that's all I got for part two. I really enjoyed it.
So Captain Brunson, she actually reminded me of another character from another show, but it's the complete opposite. And it was when she was like, we're going to get a promotion. Well, I just finished a couple weeks ago watching The Freemaker Adventures, which is a Lego Star Wars show. It's not canon, but it's so much fun to watch. I told Chris, I'm like, we're going to cover this on the show one day because it's just so good. It's almost like a satire of Star Wars. It has a plot to it, and it's very kid. Like, it's even more kid than Resistance, but, like, the plot is great, and the best part of Freemaker is how, like, satire it is. But there's a character on there named Commander Durpin, and Durpin is the complete opposite of Captain Brunson. And, Durpin in the show, in his very first, like, on-screen appearance, like, somebody is like, the rebels are here, sir, should we do something? And he's like, Lieutenant, the number one way to stay alive in the Empire is to do nothing. Because if you do something, you're going to get promoted, and then you have all this responsibility, and you're probably going to die. So we're going to do nothing, right? And then the lieutenant's like, but sir, the rebels. And he's like, no, you're trying to do something. And he's voiced by the guy who's Fry in Aqua Teen Hunger Force. He's that guy. So he has like his Fry voice going on, and it was so funny because like Durpin keeps trying to like tries the entire series to avoid conflict, but he like keeps accidentally getting promoted, and he hates every time he gets promoted. And the whole time he's like, why am I promoted again? I have so much paperwork. All I want to do is do nothing.
And you eventually end up getting promoted to working with Vader and getting choked out. So.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, it's not wrong. So when Captain Brunson was like, we're going to get a promotion, I was like, oh, she's the opposite of Commander Durpin. So I also love his name, Commander Durpin. So it's such a good name. My next note is poor Zeb. He always has a terrible time every time they come to Geonosis. First, he gets stuck on
a... Who has a good time on Geonosis ever?
That's true. But the last two times, he got stuck on an ice moon, and now he's being shot at by Ties. And I was just like, poor Zeb. Like, he always just has such a bad time when they come to this planet. In big letters, I wrote, look at Hera, not impressed, meeting Saw Gerrera, knowing he's a crazy person. But
Definitely. She is... Yeah, his reputation has definitely preceded him with her.
And I wanted to bring up a note that I made last week. So last week I had mentioned that I wonder if there's some butting heads happening between Mon Mothma and Bail Organa over using Saw Gerrera, because we know later in the show that Mon Mothma does not trust Saw and does not get along with Saw. But we saw last week that Bail Organa is willing to use Saw. And then in this episode, we see that Hera knows Saw, does not trust Saw, and is so wary of him. So it makes me wonder if, like, Hera's aware if there is conflict and if she's taking Mon Mothma's side on these things. Or is she just being wary because she knows who Saw is?
I noticed they've in the Disney Star Wars, they've worked really hard to portray that Mon Mothma, at least up until the flat out rebellion, was the more conservative, you know, rebellion leader, where she was like, yeah, you know, she was still thinking up until there was obviously no chance of it, that you could somehow still work it out politically, you know?
Yeah.
She was still willing to try to figure out some way to work in enough members in the Senate or to, you know, do this and that. And so, yeah, there's that. And probably she was a outlier, and Bail Organa and Saw Gerrera is the outlier on the other end. And Bail Organa was a little more towards the, like, you know, Bail Organa got, you know,
Bail Organa trains his daughter to be a rebel spy as a child.
Right. And Bail Organa got a little more direct look at when things went bad. Bail Organa was there and watched.
He watches mountains fold in on him as the Death Star blows him up.
Well, that too. Yeah, but at that point, that's not
a good look at it.
Any radicalization he's going to get at that point is going to be for about half a second. So, but, you know, he got a little more view of what was going on and was probably a little more like, yeah, I don't think we're going to solve this politically, you know.
I interrupted you. You said something about a Padawan, but I didn't hear you because I was talking.
No, he was there when, you know, when they were killing all the Padawans at the Jedi Temple, you know. Remember, he saw a Padawan run towards him and get shot down. So he might, you know, he would, and Mon Mothma was probably at home, you know, when that was happening, or on her home planet. You know, she was probably a little less involved in the physical aspects of politics.
Yeah. So I just find that interesting that there's, like, seems to be some splitting in the rebellions of, like, how to do things right, which is actually
very realistic.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a nice nod towards the sequel trilogy, because we know that happened with Leia. Like, she was just like, hey, there's this First Order thing, and the New Republic was like, nah, they're fine. They're just extremists. And Leia's like, yeah, I need to make a resistance. Mm-hmm. So, my only other note is, I like that Saul can see that the good guys actually lost the Clone Wars. Because this is referring to the line that he says to Kanan, like, you Jedi are the reason we lost the last war. Well, technically, the Republic, quote-unquote, won, because they beat the Separatists, who are the people that Saul was fighting. Saul was fighting the Separatists.
Right, but then they became the Separatists, basically.
Yeah.
Then they became the bad guys, and they won.
Yeah, so, like, that's what I'm getting at, because, like, the Republic technically won, but then they became the Empire, so everybody lost. And so I like, but we've been seeing this more and more in Rebels, where, like, these people are starting to see the bigger picture of the Clone Wars, like, now that they've had time to look back on it, and they're seeing, like, who actually won and who actually lost. And I don't remember where it was, maybe it was last week, might have been a couple weeks ago, but at some point we brought up that, like, probably a lot of Separatists joined the Rebellion, and we know that Cassian Andor did, because he was a Separatist that joined the Rebellion. So I like seeing, like, in Rebels timeline, being able to look that these characters are starting to look back at the Clone Wars and going, I don't think the good guys actually won, because technically they did. The Republic did technically win. So I like these, like, gray areas that it's coloring in, and that these characters are starting to realize what was actually up during that time. But that's all I have for Act 2.
All right. You want to finish this baby up?
Yeah, with an awesome fight. So, Act 3. uh-oh, the Empire has arrived. Anyway, there's drama happening, and the space family is trying to talk down Saul. But it's Ezra that points out that if Saul destroys the Queen Egg, then he'll be helping the Empire destroy the last of the Geonosians. And Ezra goes, you'll destroy the last of his family, and he'll be like you, you know, with no family, because your sister is dead. Do you want Click-Clack to have no family and be sad like you? But Saul doesn't care at all, and Ezra pulls out the most disappointed parent voice that he learned from Kenan and Hera, and he says, then you're no better than the Empire. Chopper kicks in the door, screaming wildly, because the Empire has found them. And this time, the Empire has sent in some rocket troopers. Saul gives Click-Clack back the egg to go help the Jedi and the others fight while Hera gets ready to leave. But the Empire is blocking them from going up, so Hera has no choice but to take them down further into the shaft. And a fight breaks out on top of the Ghost. Troopers are dropping down from the ship onto the ship. They're fighting them off. Rex is on the gun, shooting people out of the air. Detonators are flying everywhere. But then, the door opens, and it's time for the Mandalorian and her rising phoenix, because Sabine kicks down the door, and she has a fucking jetpack. And Sabine just wipes the fucking floor with these stormtroopers, taking the rest of them out. And all the guys are cheering her on like it's a spectator sport, except for Kanan, who is really confused because he's blind, and he can't see anything. And then they all head back inside the Ghost. But back with the Imperials, a dude tells Captain Brunson that they lost all the rocket troopers. And she literally slaps him on the back of the head. And I love her. And they move into firing position to shoot down on the Ghost, which doesn't have much more room to go at the bottom of the shaft. But Chopper is picking up something, and it's what Click-Clack wants them to see. So everyone outvotes Saul, and they go to check it out. And they find poison canisters that the Empire used to gas the Geonosians. And again, they jump to the wrong conclusions, thinking that this is what Click-Clack was drawing, because they don't have a concept of a Death Star. And this makes Saul have a change of heart, and he agrees that Click-Clack should stay on his home planet. Also, he got all the information he came for, so it's not like Saul could get anything else out of him. And our heroes have zero concept of a Death Star, and so they think that's that. And Saul takes the handcuffs off of Click-Clack and frees him. And Click-Clack takes his egg and scurries away. Hera tells everybody to load up the canisters so they can then take it back to the Senate and prove that the Empire was behind a genocide. Oh, you poor, poor good guys with your good hearts and your good brains. You think the Senate can still help you guys out. Mon Mothma would be proud. Just like we were just saying. I didn't write that in. I just added it. So, anyway. Anyway, the Empire is finally firing on the hold to try and bury the rebels, and Hera gets everyone back on the ship. And before everyone can panic, Hera gives a very mighty, "Fuck off, Empire!" and flies the Ghost up the hull like a bat out of hell. But the cruiser is still blocking them, and Hera's like, "Oh, what a cute little captain that must be flying that thing. Let's teach this bitch a lesson." And they fire everything they have at the cruiser. And Hera, General, Space Mom Syndulla fucking flies through the hole that they literally blow through the light cruiser. And it's awesome. But they lose the gas canister in the process, which is not what Bail Organa was hoping for. They call into Padme's baby daddy and Commander Sato. I just will use any opportunity to call Bail Organa Padme's baby daddy, because it just still to this day, from us using that in the Clone Wars, it's still so fucking funny to me. I will use that until I die. They call into Padme's baby daddy and Commander Sato, who says that pictures of the canisters will not be enough to convince the Senate, but it might be can be used to convince more people to join the rebellion. And Commander Sato gives them all gold stars. But they still don't know what the Empire was building. And Kanan says that they will learn to deal with it, aka the Death Star, when it pops up. And I had to laugh at this, because boy, they just don't know. And Saul thinks it's too late. And it will be. For Alderaan. The end.
Oh, I love a happy ending. So, like, When I saw those two gas canisters fall down, I'm like, oh, how awful would it be if they fell down there and gassed Click-Clack, you know?
Oh.
And then I'm like, I'm going to look, whatever happened, I'm going to look up what happened. So I went to Wikipedia to look up what happened to Click Clack. And he ended up hatching and raising the alien queen.
Yep. And then Vader killed her.
And becoming king of the Geonosians and mating with her and to keep the species going. And then she ate him, as they do.
And
I just made that all up, but that's how I pictured it going down.
So what actually happened, I almost put this in, but I didn't. The egg that Click Clack hid later hatched to become a Geonosian queen that called herself Karina. After losing her womb, she attached herself to a portable droid factory and started using it as a mechanical womb to produce B1 battle droids, which she saw as her Geonosian children. A year before AB0ABY, Sith Lord Darth Vader visited Geonosis and forcefully took away the droid factory away from her. And if I remember, this was in the first Darth Vader comic by Karen Gillan, and I think he killed her. So rest in peace, Geonosians.
Oh. I didn't know there was an actual, like, I just made it up as a joke.
No.
Almost as dark as mine.
Yeah, like in the Vader comic, I remember reading that, and I always wondered if the Vader comic took place before or after Rebels, but it takes place after. So, yeah, they didn't make it. Spoilers. You tried, Click Clack, you tried.
There's some interesting stuff in this. It was, really subtle little, like, just a few notes from, like, the original Star Wars from scenes on, like, the quieter scenes on Tatooine, which was really strange, but it worked really well, but just sort of fit in there. I just thought it was kind of weird. But, the whole scene where they go down the shaft and the rocket troopers and the way that battle goes down is, I still like the editing and stuff and the way that they portrayed the battle in part two with the bombers, but this whole battle is really, really, really cool because it was just, while I was watching it, I'm like, we haven't seen anything like this before. You know,
this is
a new cut. Like, we've seen people fly it on rocket packs here and there and stuff like that. But it was just cool with people standing on the outside of a ship that's going down, a narrow passage with being attacked from the top. It was really cool.
I haven't heard about that fight, so I'm going to go ahead and say it now. I love this fight. And I've mentioned it several times this season, but season 3 has done a really good job of, when they're having fights and battles, using their surroundings and the environment in the battle scenes. And because we saw that in the Wakanthu job when Zeb and Ezra are having a shootout with the droids, and we saw it. Oh, what episode was it? I think it was. It might have been Visions and Voices, but it might have been the episode before that. But they've just done a really good job of using the environment as in their fight choreography, which is, you know, and they used it again here. Like, they're in this tiny, small space, so they only have so much room. So really, the fight is just going up and down. There's no, like, side-to-side action. And then, like, Sabine comes out there like a fucking amazing person, and it then takes the battle, like, to another level. And so it's something that they've done, like, really great in season 3, using their environment and the places around them to really, like, showcase this fight choreography. And it makes me wonder, like, how much of that they're storyboarding, or is how much of that is, like, as the episode progresses. Because, like, you know, I could see them just being like, and they have this fight and this thing, but I wonder how much of it was storyboarded and how much they were like, okay, well, this guy is here, so Sabine has to fly here, and they animate her going there. And so that's something I would like to know, is, like, how much of this fight is, like, storyboarded out. Because they've done a really, really, really great job season 3 using their environment in fights.
Well, the way this episode feels to me, and I'm done with my notes, but, like, just to answer what you just said, I think they did storyboard it a lot. I think this episode really has the look and feel of for two reasons. One of them, like George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, that era of filmmaking, like they're especially George Lucas, but Spielberg too. But like Indiana Jones is a good example with both of them, where they are the masters of taking a sort of situation or a place, and getting the maximum interesting sequence out of it, battle sequence or action sequence out of it, and playing with those surroundings and the elements of that surrounding to make it dynamic. And this episode felt very cinematic to me, and it felt very Star Warsy to me, and that means a lot of planning with the action scenes, how you cut from one shot to another, and how it all plays out, so you know, so each piece falls into place in the right exact second. And this episode smacks of that, of like really somebody putting a lot of effort into that, because you can fudge action sequences.
Yeah.
You can have people just running around and do the action and then cut it to make it and cut out anything that doesn't work, and people will figure out what's going on. But if you meticulously plan it out, it gets a whole dynamic to it. And this one had that like all over the place. So I think they did storyboard it out and plan it out really, really well, because, you know, not only would a person get from one place to another, but the way the camera would move and the way the camera would be moving from one with one scene and then it cuts to another and the movement would continue. It really had a very well planned out in a way that you don't consciously see it. You just feel it. It was really good.
If I can touch base on this, I need to pull up. You can edit this out. Just looking at this. Okay. So to touch on that, like, I think it goes back to the three writers of this episode, of these two-parters. So one writer is, of course, Dave Filoni. And we know what Dave Filoni can do. But I was looking at the other two writers, which is Matt Michnovitz and Stephen Melching. The episodes that they've written before this, one is Rookies, which is the introduction of Domino Squad with Fives and Heavy and Echo, which very much used its surroundings in that episode. And also he wrote the Zillow Beast episodes, which is very much using his surroundings on an episode. And the other one is Matt Michnovitz. And in Clone Wars, he wrote the Citadel arc, which is the one where they have to save Tarkin and the little pig guy out of a prison. Right. So very much using their surroundings. He also wrote the Umbara arc.
That's the masterclass in that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is very much like weaving emotion between battles. And to make it more recent, he wrote the Bad Batch arc, the first episode of season 7. So like these are writers who very much know how to write action sequences while weaving emotion into action.
Yeah, they set up the sequence, and then that leaves the director and the animators to. But if you give them a Star Wars George Lucas action scene scenario, then that makes it all the easier to make it play out on screen like that visually.
Yeah.
And so yeah, there's definitely that synthesis is in this episode for sure.
This feels very much Citadel, Zillow Beast, Bad Batch, Umbara. Like it very much feels like those episodes. So yeah, it's all so well done. Big letters I wrote, Sabine with her fucking jetpack.
Yeah, I know. The Mandalorian is gonna serve this show so well. This and Clone Wars so well, like people who watch The Mandalorian and then decide to delve back into these shows are going to have those moments where they're just like, yay, they're going to know more, a little, you know, they're going to be a little more familiar with the Mandalorian lore. So those moments are going to mean more to them.
I actually had the opposite. I was like, now that Din Djarin has his jetpack, I hope we get to see a fight scene like that with him in season 2, where he's just like, well, let me put on my jetpack and just fucking take out everybody.
Well, here, this is awesome too, is synergy in here too, where Ezra goes like, "I wish I had one of those jet packs," and she's just like, "Yeah." What was it? It was the episode where he went back with the kid and he was flying away, and he's like, "I got to get me one of those," you know. And Filoni's involved in both, so it's just, you know, you have your synergies where you have people use, "I got a bad feeling about this," or a line from the old movie. But now this is like self-contained Filoni synergy, and it works just as he's making his own synergies, and I love it.
I'm going to quote something. I've heard this phrase used multiple times in other podcasts. I've heard other Star Wars writers say this. A lot of the comic book and novel writers constantly say this, which is, "Star Wars, it rhymes."
Yeah, they got that from George Lucas. Yeah, that all came from George Lucas. But like, I like that they're making some new rhymes. You know, you can't work, "I've got a bad feeling about this," to, you know, what the, you can get a saturation point for lines from the old movies.
It's a visual rhyme.
Huh?
It's a visual rhyme.
And any of them, you know, it's just nice having some new rhymes thrown in, you know.
That
it's an evolving set of rhymes, so it's not always going to be, "I got a bad feeling about this."
Yeah, so my next small note is Hera flying through a hole they blasted in the ship. I love that moment where she's just like, "Oh, this captain is showing their inexperience," and they fucking just blast a hole in the ship and fly right through it, and I love it.
Bummer for her, yeah.
I know. I actually didn't realize that this lady comes back later. She's in a later Thrawn episode, but she's only there for half a second because she's just walking through the hallway, and she like looks at Callus and then keeps walking, and I realized, I was like,
They should have had her limping through the hallway.
Oh, God, yeah.
Now she has a peg leg or something.
My next note is, this actually reminded me a lot of when we were discussing the Onderon arc, where we were saying, like, if you only watch the arc in a vacuum, it would be just, it's just okay. It's an okay arc. But in the context of Rogue One, it's a very interesting arc. And I think this is better than the Onderon arc. There's a lot more going on, in two episodes compared to those four episodes. Like, I think this is much more deeper than the Onderon arc. But what makes this arc, these two episodes, so interesting is Rogue One and A New Hope. Because Rogue One, we know Saw Gerrera, we know his trajectory, we know where he's going to be going. And what makes this interesting with A New Hope is we know what the Death Star is. We know where it's going. We know what it's going to do. So I love when seeing these episodes where it's like, we know the future as the audience, but the characters don't know. And I know I talked about that in Act One, but Rogue One and A New Hope really add so, and now The Mandalorian too, let's throw that in there. Those three things really add so much to this episode.
Yeah, and I think we're going to find that's Dave Filoni's, you know, job that he was fated to, is like doing the stuff that holds stuff together, you know, or I don't want to say correcting things, but taking like jagged edges in the story and adding to them so they're not so jagged, and he shading and depth, putting depth to things that weren't able to be shaded in depth in a, like, say, a 2-hour movie, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
I forgot to mention, when I was down in Florida, I introduced my mom to Rebels.
Ooh.
Yeah, she's really enjoying it so far. We got up to Grande's first full episode where he showed up with Luminara. She's really enjoying it. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Excellent.
My next note, this is just kind of small side note, is I'm just wondering where this episode is taking place in the Jyn Erso timeline. I know that she leaves Saul when she's a teenager, but I don't know if she's still technically with him or if she has already left. And that was just more of a questioning for me. And then I just wrote, I really need to read the Rogue One books real bad, because there's a side book called Rebel Rising, which is about young Jyn Erso. And I was just like, I need to read these books. But I was just curious of where this falls in the Jyn Erso timeline. And my very last note is, I really like what they do with Click Clack and his story. We've only ever seen bad Geonosians, but we know that the Geonosians were in the Clone Wars were manipulated by Count Dooku into leaving the Republic and being part of the Separatists. But a lot of planets left the Republic because the Republic was corrupt. And but the thing is like it's all point of view. Like we only ever saw them as antagonists, and that's the only point of view we've ever had until this episode. And I think they've done a really good job showing another point of view. It's like what Obi-Wan says to Luke. It's all about your point of view. And I think that's something that animated Star Wars does so well, is they give us different points of view. Like that one episode in the Clone Wars where Ahsoka and Padme go to the Separatist side and she meets a Separatist and she meets Lux Bonteri and she meets Mina Bonteri. Like, animated Star Wars does such a good job of showing a much fuller universe. And I think they did a really, really great job showing us another side of the Geonosians for the first time. And I think it's just really well done.
Yep.
But that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
No, you ready to double score it up?
Double score it up for me, Chris.
Okay, so I gave this episode a 9. Thought it was much superior in pacing and presentation to the last one. Not that the last one was bad at those things. I gave it an 8. But yeah, so this one got a 9, and so as a whole, I just split the difference and gave it an 8.5.
I did the opposite.
Ooh.
So I like this episode a lot more than last week. I think last week had a lot of setup, and this had a lot more drama with Click Clack. And the fights are awesome. Fucking Sabine with a jetpack. But I like how they handled Click Clack and showing a good Geonosian. And I like all the intrigue with Saul and like showing how he's butting heads, and it's all really good. So the episode on its own, the episode on its own, I gave it an 8.5 out of 10, so it's higher than last week. But I think when you put the two together and you watch them together and they have that like synergy together, I think together they're a 9 out of 10.
So this is the whole being more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, I think they really work well together to do a solid like two-parter, but separately they're just weaker than they are together. So, because you really do need the first half to make the second half really good. And so they make each other better, but separately they're not. So, all right. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, and very soon our website. How's that coming along?
I don't know. I haven't heard yet. I imagine there's work being done on it, though. I know there's work being done on it.
Well, possibly soon you'll be able to leave feedback on a website, too.
Yes.
This week, our feedback comes from the Facebook page for our holiday commentaries for Empire Strikes Back. And just so you know, Chris, the lines separate conversations.
Okay. So the first one's from Mike Zumo, and he says, I believe the Emperor's face was played by an old woman with Clive Reville playing the voice. I don't know who Clive Reville is.
I'm assuming he played the Empire? And I'll Google it. Give me a second to Google.
Oh, I know what he's talking about. He's talking about the original Empire. Yes, it wasn't. I thought he was making a joke, but no, I think he's right. I think he's actually stating a fact. It was an old woman, and I think that is the name of the person who did the voice. So that's actually a factual post instead of I'm used to snark from Mike Zumo.
Oh, Clive Reville is still alive. Anyway.
A lot of the Star Wars people are still alive, Hope. They're not that old. Well, they are pretty old.
Well, he's 89, so.
Oh, geez. Okay. Never mind. All right. So now we're on another conversation.
There's this your Clive Reveal facts for the day.
This one comes from Gene Hendricks. Clean Gene, the washing machine. The Gene, the unbalanced washing machine. He gets the dirty clothes all wet, then he goes out and strangles people with them. It's unbalanced. Okay. Okay, Gene says, since you brought it up, Hope. Oh, I kept forgetting to call you Hope all through the whole episode. And it comes to Gene to remind me. Since you brought it up, Hope, the passage of time is not shown very well. Remember, the hyperdrive on the Falcon wasn't working, so they had to limp to Bespin. That means that Luke was training for at least a month, if not several, while the Falcon made its way to Cloud City. I really wish that this had been explained better in the movie. For I am Gene.
Same, or I wouldn't have brought it up.
And then Mike Zumo says, unless it's explicitly stated, movies tend to suck at showing how much time has passed. Even TV that doesn't advance in real time, take The Expanse. The books are far better at illustrating the passage of time than the show is. Yeah, what happened to the old days when they just showed a camera and the pages started blowing off it? And Gene replies, what bugs me is that it's something that could be easily remedied in just dialogue. We've been here for a week already. Shouldn't we leave, kind of thing? And Mike Zumo says, Han could have said something to the effect of Bespin being a month's flight or something. Yes, he could have. Jonathan Schaefer Hames said, it's Star Wars. It's all speed of plot, which
that's
is true.
Megan and Lauren say that all the time. Hyperspace moves at the speed of plot.
Yeah. All right. So now we got another a separate conversation with Paul C. Kelly.
Ooh, yeah.
When Han Solo said that Lando was his pal, it reminded me of when Hondo said Obi-Wan Kenobi or a Jedi was his pal. LOL. Not so legit. LOL. And after what? I wonder what he says LOL if I should go. Ha 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 ha. I think I will.
I actually like you reading out LOL. Like LOL.
LOL. And after watching Solo, especially if Lando and Han did not meet since that movie meant that they weren't really that close and more acquaintances that had to work together. Oh, yeah. Either way, it worked out, and they were good buddies in the end. Well, we don't know specifically if they were good buddies. We know they were good buddies. We don't know if they were good buddies in the end, but we know Lando probably would be open to that. Mike Zumo says,
I still go by what you were saying ever since you pointed out to me. I think it was the Revenge of the Jedi commentary.
That you had brought up
that Lando and Leia would actually be really good besties to go shopping together. And ever since you brought that up in one of our commentaries, I was like, yes, yes, they go shopping all the time together.
Yeah, they both have a sort of have a bit of flair in their style. So
both
Mike
fashion icons.
Mike Zumo said, I want to know what Chewie refers to in Empire when Han says that was a long time ago. I'm sure he forgot about that. That it probably could be many.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's referring to Han tricking him out of the Falcon. It could be. Yeah. That trope is like solidly in my mind from the Marvel Star Wars comics, because every time Han Solo ran into anybody, they were just like, Han Solo, you owe me 18 billion credits. All right, that's it for letters.
Do you want to do the Snickers or the Kit Kat Minis? I kind of looking at the Kit Kat Minis. Or the Kinder Happy Hippo Biscuit.
You pick it out. I'll eat it.
You want to do the Kinder Happy Hippo Biscuit?
Okay, what does it look like? Oh, never mind. I'm looking right at it. Oh, yeah. This one looks interesting. This one looks like a caterpillar. Oh, no, it does look like a hippo. Oh, my God. He's got eyes. He's got eyebrows.
He does.
This is the first. I don't know about eating food with eyebrows, Hope. That's, like, kind of scary.
If you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kat, so our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review. And this week, we are doing the Kinder Happy Hippo from England. And Dario is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, so you can check him out there. It's very crumbly. I'm trying not to
I know. I'm trying to hold him and figure out how I'm going to eat him without having him go all in a circle around my chair. He's like a hippo made of wafer that smells like a...
There's cream inside.
He smells like one of those Rocher candies.
He tastes like a Rocher candy without the chocolate coating. Oh, my God. It's so light.
It is.
Oh my god, it's much lighter than I thought it was gonna be.
It's like a Rocher with a vanilla cream, and I just bit his snout off.
I like the vanilla cream in the middle.
And let me just say, I'm not gonna say what it is, but we've got a candy treat coming.
I'm so excited. I didn't get a chance to answer you.
And it's on the way. You'll probably be hearing about it on here and eat it and beat it. The filling is very like vanilla pudding like.
I'm gonna save his butt for later.
I was thinking the same thing as I bit his face off.
That's really good. Thank you so much, Dario. We love you.
It's just got this hint of like maybe like a little hazelnut or something.
Wow. I'm trying to, it looks like on the, I think maybe hazelnut because there's a picture on it and it looks like milk. And I know it's not onions, but the picture looks like it's onions, but I bet it's hazelnuts.
Definitely not onions.
Yeah. It says Kinder Milk and Honey Nut, Hazelnut, Happy Hippo Biscuit. It says it right on the package. There we go.
I'm eating his butt anyway. I can't wait.
Well, then in that case, I'll take the first where you can find me.
Look at inside you, Hope, while I eat this hippo butt.
You can find me at JGuys and Jedi. I run our Twitter account. I feel so weird going first. You can also find me at
Hope. It's unnatural.
I know. You can also find me at Hope Molinex on Twitter. So let me explain Geeky Girl Experience because I haven't had a chance to talk about it on the show yet. So a few weeks ago, Geeky Girl Experience suffered a massive server crash. And as in like the hard drive, my friend has been hosting my site on his server and the physical hard drive corrupted and he had to rebuild the entire tower. So we lost everything with Geeky Girl Experience. Luckily, I have the majority of everything backed up on my computer or on my Google Docs. I'm only going to be missing a few articles, but I'm in the process of rebuilding Geeky Girl Experience. So it's all coming back. It's just going to take some time and it's very rough looking, but Geeky Girl Experience is now going through a rebuild. It's still coming. I still plan to write about Clone Wars. That was actually my plan for tomorrow or this Monday. Week. Huh?
For this week, yeah.
Yeah, I plan to write Clone Wars weekly. I do plan to do that. So it's coming, but for the next probably month or two, Geeky Girl Experience is going to very much not look like itself because I'm in the process of rebuilding it. But you can still find me there. I still plan to write about it. I want to thank everybody who's been super supportive of this. Most people who listen to this show knows that my website crashed because you guys have been very supportive through sending me nice messages and stuff. As I've gone through a few really, really tough weeks, the last few weeks, I've been going through a lot with my family and stuff. So thank you everybody for the really nice messages. It's been really great to hear from all of you. And you can also find me on Archive of Our Own under the name Chaos Lydia, where I write Star Wars fan fiction. So where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at TwoTrueFreaks.com, which is also undergoing its own little thing. And it's going to have some new options and new things to look at. And you'll be able to, yes, reply to podcasts, comment on podcasts now. Finally, moving into the 21st century with Two True Freaks. And we post all our podcasts there. It's at twotruefreaks.com. We are also on Facebook. We have the Two True Freaks podcast there where we also post all our podcasts. And we have the Cantina, which is the place for casual nerd conversation. You can also find us on Twitter at Two True Freaks, and that's run by Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene.
Bump. And yeah, just keep up with us. Hopefully in the next few weeks I could tell you more about what the website looks like. Who knows, it might even look different when you're hearing this because we're recording ahead. But
yeah. So, oh, okay. So what's next week? Oh, next week is a Zebisode. I love Zebisodes. This is actually probably my least favorite Zebisode, but I've only seen it once, so I'm always happy to, like, watch the Zeb episode because I love Zeb. But I remember being this like, the Zeb episode I was the most disappointed in with the entire series. So I'm actually really, really, really interested to revisiting this episode again. So I think, if I remember correctly, I think Kallus and Thrawn are in this episode.
Oh, jeez.
Let's see. Season 3. Steph's in blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah.
Hope's going to have to bring her drool cup to this episode.
Yep, Thrawn and Kallus are in this episode. Yay! So I'm excited to revisit it. We're going to be doing Warhead next week, so... Go watch Clone Wars, people. Bye!
Bye-bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.